James Ham has one focus on his beef farm in Westmeath: trees. There are over 4,000 metres of hedgerow on his farm, and here he talks about trees, hedgerows, coppicing, and how farmers can make a huge difference. Hi James, thanks for joining us today. You farm 56 hectares in County Westmeath. Can you describe your farm and your farming system for us?
Our farm is based on clay soils, free draining, not a lot of watercourses on the land. It's a grass system that we run here with some arable in it to feed our beef cows, our suckler cow system, which is autumn calving. We calve the cows in the autumn time of the year, and we house the cattle over the winter on a combination of slatted accommodation and straw bedding. We are self-sufficient in feed from our own spring barley or oats crop, along with most of our own straw. We have to buy in very little. The fields are divided into reasonably good sizes, mostly two, three, and four hectare sizes, which is quite decent. And the divisions are by means of hedgerows, a hedge and bank system, which is clay banks which were dug up and planted with a variety of bushes, trees, and other things. The hedge system on the farm is probably in excess of up to 300 years of age, if not older. So there's quite old stuff there. Half of our farm is now under forestry. So we've converted about 26 hectares or 60 acres over to a forestry system, which is of mixed species, conifer and broadleaves. And we're managing that on continuous cover principles.
How did you get into forestry and woodland?
We always, my father before me was keen on trees. So it's sort of traditional on the farm that we always looked after trees on the farm. We were interested, he was always interested in having trees. So there was no major removal of trees over the years. But to answer the question better, I think where I became more and more interested in trees as a farm, an element on the farm, was because of the hedgerow system on the farm. Because hedgerows, essentially, because of their nature, because of all the species that are on them, are actually a linear woodland. Mm-hmm. So while we didn't have any blocks of what would be considered woodland or forestry on the farm for years, we did have our good hedgerow system with a lot of variety in it. Various species of trees, ash, oak, beech, elm, and so on. And that was always maintained for the sake of the trees and for the bushes, as well as the other aspects of hedgerows. And from there, I particularly became keen and learned a lot about trees from that, and then progressed into having forestry.
So amongst all that, you have about 4,000 metres of hedgerows. So it's a bit of a speciality topic for you. But for the listener, you might just explain what a really good, healthy, thriving hedgerow looks like for you.
Okay, well, that question gets detailed. So hedgerows, I suppose, if we go back to the actual start, hedgerows themselves were initially planted solely for the purpose of dividing one farm from another. So they were set up as a boundary system. So to divide my farm from my neighbour's, there was a physical boundary put in place, which was constructed in such a way that you had some soil and stone and whatever was available was excavated and dug up and formed into a line of a bank in a linear system. And on that bank, all the different species, mostly thorn species like white thorn and black thorn, were planted in. And it was solely at that stage for the purposes of boundary. And then we also had the internal boundaries in the farm constructed in the same way. And the idea was that they provided boundaries between fields, between field systems, and it was a means of controlling livestock within that system. So initially, that was the only reason for the hedge, or it was the initial sole reason. But at the time they were constructed, people were aware of the need of producing other having another resource for producing items that they needed on the farm. So other plants were put in for useful purposes, and hence the elm and oak. All those things were planted for various timber uses within the farm or on the, in the household. And then there was also fruit trees planted in the form of crab apples and damson and other things like that that would have been used for to sustain people. So when we start out with that system of hedgerow with multiple species in it and a lot of them of different uses, to talk about what is a healthy hedgerow system in my mind is to look at that hedge and say, are all those elements still present? What form is the hedge in as regards livestock control? Does it perform the function of livestock control? Does it perform the function of keeping me separate from my neighbor's livestock? And then are those other smaller numbers of species present, which were originally to give us a resource for food or useful materials for the house and the farm? Are they still there? And then, as regards the health of the hedge itself, if you have all those elements in it, and we look at it, and we see that the trees themselves are actually doing quite well, the thorn bushes are in good condition, they're healthy, there's not a lot of rot in them, but as well as that, not a lot of gaps, because obviously the gaps would lead to livestock straying from one side to the other. There's a combination of things which would lead you to having a healthy hedge. The health of the bushes themselves is paramount, but you also have the retention of all the elements of the hedge itself for the various uses. And hazel was another one that was used. Hazel was put into hedges where people had to needed things like scallops for thatching on the house and stuff like that. So it
So
can
there's
be
a
a
very historical importance to the different species and they're all growing at different levels. But in this day and age, with kind of modern technology and stuff, they're still really important in terms of a healthy ecosystem around the field as well, aren't they?
Absolutely. And this is something that I think we really, really need to keep in mind on a daily basis as farmers, from the point of view as we take it for granted. Those hedges were there. I grew up with them. Everyone that's on a farm, if they grew up on the farm, the hedge was there in one shape or another. So we tend to take them for granted. But if we stand back and imagine what the hedge was for and how it can be useful for us now, we can see that it's still very relevant. I mean, the livestock boundary, the livestock control part of it is relevant. But we've also I think turned a corner here in modern times where we see that there is a need for more natural resources to be produced for our daily needs. So if we could replace some bought-in materials with items that can be produced on the farm, whether it be planked timber or whether it be simple things like pea sticks from the hazel in the wood to support your vegetables in your garden and things like that. But I think one thing that we have lost, and there's a huge depth of knowledge lost here, is the fact that when the hedges were initially constructed 200, 300, 400, maybe even longer ago, the original biodiversity which was on the land and maybe associated with the remains of forest woodland systems that were there at the time, that woodland biodiversity has now found refuge within the hedge systems on a lot of farms. And there's a lot of plants there that you don't normally see nowadays, but they're actually surviving and being retained within the hedge system, as well as insects that live on them, and as well as all the wildlife that depend on that type of a semi-woodland system.
So,
But as regards the plants, the loss of the medicinal uses of all those plants, I think, has been a terrible shame because we have they're surviving within the hedgerow system, and if we could relearn what people knew years and years ago about how to use various plants. I think it could be important going into the future.
So, James, we're here today to talk about managing a hedge. Why should I think about hedge laying? Tell me about hedge laying.
Okay, well, managing a hedge should be seen as a means of keeping the hedge healthy, as we discussed. So if the hedge is healthy, it will obviously survive with all the properties there. Now, hedge laying and coppice are two of the traditional methods that would have been used down the years, and they are means and elements of managing the hedge to keep it healthy. So if we think of the hedge as the linear woodland that we spoke about, that linear woodland, and in our case up to 4,000 or in excess of 4,000 meters on the farm, that linear woodland is essentially a line of trees. The whitethorn, as we think of it, and the blackthorn, and that we call them bushes, we call them shrubs, but they're really striving to become trees. What they want to do is to grow tall and achieve their potential at their own height. And we have some of them left here at full height that were never treated. But what happens if you allow them to do that and become maybe overgrown and that, eventually they will succumb to old age and die. So the great thing about hedgeling or coppice is that it uses the natural ability of a lot of those tree species to regrow from being cut. So when we cut them, as in a coppice woodland system, and they regrow from the stump where they were cut, it is actually making it young again. It produces new growth. It continues the lifespan of the wood, the tree, the plant within the hedge. And it's one of those few things that we can happily say we can prolong the life of something indefinitely by treating it in such a way. The use of hedge laying developed then as a means of primarily protecting the boundary element of the hedge. So in other words, to improve the ability of the hedge to be a boundary for livestock. So what you do there is it will depend on the size of the stem that you're going to treat. So you go in and you recognize that there's a hedge of a certain size that needs to be improved, be made young again, and the gaps have to be improved. And so what hedge laying is the activity of going in and cutting the bush. And this sounds contradictory, but if we go in with the right tools and the technique, what we do is we cut the bush. We don't cut it through fully. We cut it through about maybe 75, 80%, and we leave a hinge, a flexible hinge on it, which we then use to bend the stem over and lay it. And this is where the term comes from, is from laying the hedge. So you're bringing it from a vertical height to probably down to a 40 degree, 35 to 45 degree angle, and you're laying it almost horizontally in a line on the hedge. And obviously that will bring the barrier effect back into the hedge. But what it also does is by making the bushes young again, you're also maintaining the shelter for the plants that exist. You're maintaining the shelter for the biodiversity that's there. And because it's still connected to its own root system, which has the root system at the stage you're talking about here is already a mature root system, and there's huge power in it. Within 6 months, that laid bush will have reflushed with leaves, will have regrown and had developed the ability to flower. And we see this all the time with the most with a lot of those bush species, that they will flower immediately in the year after being laid, and will and produce fruit again in the form of haws or sloes or whatever it is that we're using. And therefore, the life of the hedge is prolonged, the resource of the hedge is prolonged, and you don't lose any structure or habitat in pretty quickly after laying a hedge. The habitat is restoring itself almost immediately. If you think that, you know, when you look at it on day one and we make that cut, we may leave the flexible hinge, we bend the bush over, you look at it and you say, oh crikey, I've removed so much shelter and cover there for biodiversity and wildlife and that in it. Because it is still connected and growing within the short space of time, by the end of that year, I can guarantee you those hedges are already maintaining the ability to support life within them.
So I have a couple of questions here, James. So I'll quick fire them at you. Just because you brought it up before, you brought up coppicing. What the difference between hedge laying and coppicing is, one, coppicing is cutting all the way through. Hedge laying is just kind of 80% cutting and then bending. When do you do one and when do you do the other?
This is where the assessment of the nature of the hedge is. If you come to a hedge, the laying process in a hedge will be dictated by the size of the stem that has to that needs to be rejuvenated. So there comes a time when you reach a limit of the size where it'll be very, very difficult to lay that bush, and it'll be very, very difficult even if you try to get it to go over without breaking off. So at that stage, a lot of the time you have to make a decision, would that hedge be better off coppiced? So coppicing then, as you say, is to come in and cut as low as possible and remove all the material from the hedge and allow that stump to regrow on its own and produce new material. And you'll do that in the case of overgrown hedges where the stems are probably too brittle, too big, too hard to handle, and probably too top heavy as well. And coppicing is done there. Now, coppicing is very severe and you do lose the habitat effect for a year or two, but in the context of prolonging the life of a hedge and bringing it back to a good state, coppicing is essential in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. And then when should you lay a hedge? I mean, is it autumn, winter? And also, how often should you do it?
The laying activity or coppicing or any cutting of any hedge should only take place in the winter. Now, the rules under the law legislation for the Wildlife Act for bird nesting is from that you shouldn't cut between the 1st of March and the 1st of September. So that means you're working in the winter time, rejuvenating the hedge between the 1st of September and the 1st of March, the 28th of February. That is one reason for doing it that way, but there's actually better reasons if we think about it. And the better reasons for doing it at that time of the year is, firstly, you're reaching the dormant stage in the hedges cycle for the year. So you're not going to interfere as much with the life cycle of the hedge by allowing it to go dormant in the winter and go to sleep. It'll recover better from those cuts that we make, and it'll be ready in the springtime to come back with new sprouts almost immediately when it comes back to life. The other thing about that is that you won't be interfering, obviously, with wildlife living in the bushes or nesting or that in the summer months. And that's really, really important. But also in the context of the wildflowers, you won't interfere with them flowering and going to seed. There's a, you know, it doesn't destroy the life within the hedge quite as much. If we were to take on the business of cutting hedges in the summertime and cut them, let's say, keep them in check. Sometimes you see this going on around gardens and that, where people may cut their hedge a couple of times a year, but different types of species of plants. But if we were to do that with the farm thorn hedges, I mean, the very least you would do there would reduce the viability of the hedge. You take the vigor out of it because it's continually striving to produce new material, and you'll wear out the resources in the roots. So it's essential that it's only done in the dormant time of the year in the winter.
James, is there any hedge that can be laid, even if it's old and mature?
No, in the context of a hedge being old and mature, I think we have to reach a stage where we say, okay, that has gone beyond our ability to restore it to a young age. Now, that in its own way is not a disaster. In fact, it is very good in some cases. I mean, I see hedges here that were never treated. It's obvious that they were never coppiced. It's obvious that they were never laid. And what they are essentially now are lines of whitethorn trees. And the blossom on them in the month of May is absolutely incredible. So they provide a huge resource there for biodiversity in their own right. And so by early in the year, you have all this blossom, and then obviously later in the year, you have all the berries on them. So we can leave sections of hedge like that. We can leave lines of white thorn trees there. A certain amount would depend on whether they are provide, if you're dependent on them for stock proofing or not. But look at it, there would be, it's quite simple nowadays to put a fence on two sides of a remains of a what we call an escaped hedge like that, and just leave it there and let it do its own thing. The important thing would be that the bank structure that it's resting on is not accessible to livestock, because they will degrade the bank and obviously expose the roots, and the trees suffer from that, and then obviously will die off and rot a lot quicker. But yeah, and of course we need different stages of hedges on the farm. The beauty of doing things by means of manual process like hedge laying is that obviously, because it's manual, you're not going to do huge lengths of hedge in any one year. So you'll have different stages of growth within the hedge. You'll have a laid hedge that was laid last year, the one the year before, the one the year before. And you'll also have a hedge that you're only coming to, that's due to be laid, and you have the intermediary ones. So the continuity of resource for wildlife biodiversity is easy to maintain. And if we look at all the essential where hedges contribute to that biodiversity on the farm, and this is another of these things that we tend to take for granted, we don't appreciate half enough. When we look at that, we have, as I think I heard Donna Mullen on a previous podcast talking about bats. I mean, the bats use, I see bats using the hedgerow line here in the evening times. Barn owls use them. It's been proven from Birdwatch Ireland with some of their tract surveys that the barn owl depends on hedgerow systems to hunt along. I see the kestrel using the hedge, the either sides of the hedge. The buzzard sits on top of the high trees in the hedge and observes its prey around the place. Even down to dragonflies, it's amazing. We've two or three very big dragonflies. I'm not good on the species. I think one of them is the, what do they call it? Anyway, the hawker. There's a three-spotted hawker or some of those. And you see those even hunting up and down the hedge system, looking mm-hmm. for insects of their own. So the different sizes of hedge, whether it be the freshly laid hedge of this season compared with those old trees that had gone beyond sensible treatment, all those are good elements of good hedges, as long as we watch out for the things that can destroy them, and that is protect the hedge bank under them, and do not overuse machinery. And that's an essential one that we really need to watch out for, because while machinery is absolutely necessary in the context of most of us are farming on our own and we need some element of help there, and the machine is great for doing certain things, but inappropriate use of machinery like flails and that to keep older hedges in place is destroying them on a daily basis. And an absolute no-no is to be using diggers for pushing them down, and that's things like that. So we have to learn that we keep the different structures there, and there's nothing wrong with having different sizes.
So James, when you go around the countryside and you kind of see the so-called productive farms with the neat box hedge, what do you think, or what would you say to these farmers about their hedges?
The shame is that a lot of farmers neither appreciate nor know nor want to know what they have. And that is hard to say. I'm a farmer, and I know it sounds very critical of a lot of guys. Now, to sort of qualify that a bit, I would say that we have been led down a road with a model of farming that tells us that there is no room for nature on our farms. We have to be productive, we have to be efficient, we have to have high stocking rates. And the stupid thing about that is that we can have the high stocking rates and we can be efficient and productive, but nature can still exist, coexist along with that on the farm with very little modification. But once again, it's a question of knowledge. It's a question of learning what you have, and most of all, appreciating what you have. The overuse and inappropriate use of machinery is terrible to see ongoing. And we particularly are conscious of the way the flail is inappropriately used. Now, I get a contractor in and we use the flail on this farm here to do some trimming and some management on hedges. But I would defy anyone to see where the flail has been, and that is the difference. The difference is that the overuse and inappropriate use of machinery, and then to cap it all, what is going on at the minute, and I can show two or three farmers no distance from me here, where guys are working diggers and absolutely killing hedges. They're absolutely destroying hedges. They're wiping out biodiversity. They're wiping out the hedge resource that they have without realizing the harm they're doing to their own farm. It's so ridiculous that's going on.
Do you feel that the new agri schemes are supporting hedgerows or not?
Absolutely not.
And in what way do you think that?
We have a new so-called environment scheme called Acres In now, and it is so ridiculous the impact it's going to have on hedges. It's going to have such a negative impact on hedge. It just does not make sense. Now, I'm even reluctant to describe why it's going to be that way, because it may even give guys ideas about how to go about doing the wrong thing. But there is a rule within that acre scheme that says that if we select hedge laying or hedge or coppicing, that it must be finished by the end of year two. Now, you can select up to 400 meters to do within the course of the 5-year scheme, but you must have it done by the end of the second year, which means you have to do, if you want to maximize the payment using your 400 meters, you do 200 meters this year and 200 meters next. But what's going to happen is, guys are going to get machines in year one. They're going to designate their 400 meters of hedge to get coppiced. They're going to maximize their payment on that, and they're going to wipe out 400 meters in one single year with machine and get paid for it by the Department of Agriculture. It's so ridiculous. It's wiping out biodiversity and hedges. See, I told you I'd go wrong on this.
What would you see as a kind of a better solution to this for farmers?
Well, oh crikey, there's a lot of stuff going on here. Firstly, the department did not ask people who know about hedge laying and hedge management when it came to getting sensible input into the scheme. That was the first problem. And we know that for a fact because that help was offered to them and they refused it. Secondly, more thought needs to be put into the selection of the hedge for the particular action. So is it, as we discussed earlier, is it suitable for laying or is it not suitable for laying? Is it only laid suitable for coppice? But then not doing too much in any one year would be critical, because at least if we say, okay, let's take a round figure of 100 meters to be coppiced, which is, as we discussed, the severe action, but is necessary in some cases on hedges. If we select 100 meters this year on a hedge, within the context of a farm where there's probably, and a lot of farms, 1,000 meters, 2,000 meters, could be anything up to 4,000 meters, depending on the size of the farm, 100 meters will not terrifically impact on the overall hedge system within the farm and will allow the wildlife to adjust for the couple of years while it's recovering. But if we say within the scheme that has to be done for we can do up to 400 meters and we do it within 1 year, well then obviously there's a huge difference there. So I think people need to learn about what the proper actions are. The department needs to learn about what the proper actions are. The assessment of the hedges is essentially where the problem is going wrong, and then we need to think this through on a long-term basis. It is not just for 1 year. It's not just for 5 years of a scheme. It is into the future and going on.
James, where would you start advising another farmer if they want to put together a plan for laying their hedges? What are the main things to consider?
First thing to do is to know your hedge. And that sounds like a maybe a bit glib statement, but I think if we can slow down in our daily activities over the course of 1 year and get to know our hedge and realize, oh, I didn't notice that shrub there before. What's that? If you don't know it, I mean, there's shrubs here and there's plants I don't know, even though my father knew lots of them. But you have to get to know what you have first. So if you know what you have and know that that hedge there is obviously of a different size to this one here, maybe find out a bit about. As regards deciding whether you lay or coppice or trim or leave well enough alone, I think there are people out there who know and who have done the process, and the Hedge Lane Association of Ireland has guys there who would talk to people and try and advise them about what's the best approach for a hedge. I think the first thing that needs to be done is for people to actually ask that question, what should I do with this? And to not designate a hedge for a specific action and then discover that that action is not appropriate for it.
Okay, finally, James, I mean, is there one memory that stands out for you that laying hedges you realize provided, say, a better habitat for wildlife on your farm?
Well, I think if I was to answer that, we could be here a long time. But I think something that amazes me annually is the fact that I will take on a section of hedge. Now, I would see a maximum of 100 meters to be done in any one year, absolute maximum, no longer than that. What amazes me annually when I go in, and obviously you're hands on, you're in there right at the base of those bushes, you're clearing away stuff, you're taking out the weeds, the what we shouldn't call them weeds, but the plants that aren't they're not constructive to your hedge land. And you're in there, and every single year I come out on a day and I say, I never saw that one before. I never I'm going up and down here herding cattle all summer, and I never noticed that plant. And I mean, I came across a holly bush that I didn't actually know was in. I mean, holly is visible, but I didn't know it was in that section of hedge because it was so small and it was within the structure. Things like plants such as tutsan and various other ones that aren't quite so common. Discover them all the time in hedges where I didn't see the way. You walk along a hedge in the course of your daily activities and you say, well, a lot of white thorn in that, not much else in it. And then suddenly you go in hedge lane in the winter and you just go, oh crikey, five or six other things. And that is every year. Every year I know from talking to other guys who are doing this that it's a common feature that if we it adds to the knowledge we have of our land. It also contributes to that reassurance that those hedges are providing a huge resource, and it'll encourage us to do that bit more to maintain that resource, maintain it into the future. And if we allow that to be there, especially what I've seen now in the context of the hedgerow system, when we put in our new afforestation or a new forestry on half the farm, the hedgerows that are there, which we are continuing to maintain within the forestry, allowing them enough space and that, they have a biodiversity at the base, which is essentially a woodland biodiversity, and it's going to be there to colonize out into the new woodland, out into the new forestry, if we just treat it right. So the resource has been maintained, it has been kept for the future, and really, it's a no-brainer. We don't have to do anything for it. It's there. As long as we, sometimes you just don't do anything. If you don't do anything, it maintains, it remains there. If we leave it. It's not like coming in under some sort of a scheme and being told you must do this, you must do that, you must do the other. With hedgerows, a lot of the time is you just allow it to be itself and allow it to do its own thing.
James Hamm, thanks for being my guest today.
You're welcome, Bridget, and thanks for asking.
You can contact me, Bridget Barry, on info@farmingfornature.ie, and links to James's farm are in the show notes. Please share this pod, rate and review. It really helps us spread the word. It's both a podcast for farmers and non-farmers to enjoy.